Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, cove me in the drowsy hours, as the merlot light gleams garnet on the bar, amidst the honeyed atoms of home and the dust caught in shafts. Close the door onto the vast outside, where perches a raven the size of night. Close the door, close it now, slide all manner of bolts to cove us in the moon underwater. Robin, I thought I wasn't going to make it here.
Oh no, what's happened to you this time?
Well, I got caught in the crowds on the main street here in the correct realm. They are going absolutely crazy.
The crowds on the bridge?
The crowds on the bridge, the crowds on the street, under the awnings, in the archways. They're all out, I think, to meet our guest this week. There's hollering, there's catcalling, the odd hear chucked in amongst the affair. It's a real buzz. There's a real hubbub amongst them.
Yes, there's lots of hallooing.
There's
rhubarbing.
There is rhubarbing, actually, and not a small amount of sort of flag waving and also flag weaving. Some people making their flags at the roadside.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're doing now with the intro, because I don't know why I mentioned bridges earlier. I suppose Westminster Bridge.
Yeah, well, you know, what is a bridge if not a road above another road?
Yeah.
And as we all know, you can't drive on the same road twice, as Wittgenstein said. But I did catch one chap. You know how people tend to climb up lampposts, etc.?
Do they?
Yeah, in times of sort of high fever and high excitement.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Maybe to hang some bunting?
Maybe to hang some bunting with a bit better view. But anyway, this chap was at the top of one of our oil lanterns here. He was filibustering his heart out.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So that was quickly brought to a stop.
You'd be a good filibuster, I have to say, John. Some of these intros.
I think I could fill an entire filibuster.
Yeah, you really could.
Anyway, the crowd is reaching its crescendo, and I must assume that that means this week's guest is heading towards the door. And yes, here she is. In walks the Right Venerable Sir Honourable Sir Dame Sir Knight Sir Captain Sir Jess Phillips. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
Hello.
It was quite the crowd.
It was quite the crowd, wasn't it? I'm sorry if they... But you must be used to all that now.
I'm used to a man called Steve Bray, who I believe has become famous for being in a crowd outside Westminster, playing various musical interludes such as Money, Money, Money. And so I'm very used to, you know, a thronging crowd as I walk about my business.
Do you have to sort of train yourself to block out, like, I can understand when you're in the sort of House of Commons, you're used to the certain sort of back and forth. But when people are just like trying to interrupt an interview by any means possible, that must drive you absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it is annoying. But you are just you used to just sort of carrying on. I mean, the best thing to do is refer to it, because it's not like it can't be heard or seen. I have to say the thing I find the most difficult. So the sort of thing at the moment is that there's constantly some music playing outside. Like today it was the Imperial March from Star Wars. And, you know, that's one thing. But like when they're trying to sort of target, because it's Prime Minister's questions today, you can understand that. But often I'm in Parliament, like, for example, hearing from families of murdered people or people who've had terrible instances. And it's not, you know, it's not great that they have like ABBA blaring at them while they're doing that. So that is the most irritating thing about it, I would say. But, you know, I believe in everybody's right to protest, so whatever.
I remember when I was watching the press conference with, I forgot his name now, the guy who went to Barnard Castle. How can I have forgotten his name?
Cummings.
Yeah. And someone was like playing the saxophone in the background throughout the whole thing. And I was like, oh, come on, mate. People are like, whatever you think of the guy, people are trying to pay quite close attention to this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say that any protest, my advice to the would-be protester, would-be thronging crowd, would be have an outcome.
Yes, have an end point.
Yes, have an outcome that you are seeking that isn't just about the fight. There is so much in division and, like, you know, rhetoric at the moment where all I watch is people having a row for having a row's sake. And I think, well, what's your actual... Even when I agree with the protest, I'm like, what's the outcome you're after? Like, you know, like, let's come up with a tangible solution and let's work towards it. But, you know, protesting for the sake of protesting is a pointless endeavour.
So before we begin to kit out your dream pub, Jess, I've got two main questions about sort of the political life, one of which is pub-based. Mm-hmm. First off, I mean, you've come to the correct realm today through various glitches and tears in the sort of space-time continuum. Luckily, it's one of the great expense-free trips, so you don't have to worry about, you know, whether mm-hmm. you were travelling first class. You know, it's nothing if not a third home. But do you have to sort of clear this kind of thing with any kind of body or committee? Because it sort of feels like politicians are held to perhaps the most exacting standards uh-huh. of any sort of profession. Do you have to say to someone, oh, is it okay if I go to the correct realm to a pub that reveals itself next week? Does someone have to approve it?
In theory, I am meant to have all things that might be made public agreed to by, not by any sort of institution that has anything to do with Parliament, but by the Labour Party. However, I don't tend to do that. So not really. If I was here in the correct realm to talk and launch a specific policy that I might have about pubs, which incidentally, there is shit tons of policy. And I'd say one of the probably the second, animals first, Palestine second. The third most frequent thing people write to me is about beer duty and protecting local pubs. So there is a huge amount of policy in that space. So if I was here to be talking specifically about politics in the correct realm, then I would probably have to clear that with someone. But otherwise, no, I'm a fairly free agent. I can do whatever I want. If you were paying me $1 million to enjoy a tipple, then that would probably have to be cleared with somebody. But fortunately or unfortunately, that isn't the case.
I mean, I'm a celebrity next.
Yeah, well, quite, yeah. That's you should get that approved, yeah. Although nobody would ever approve that.
Yeah.
So, you know, Parliament, though, the electorate, there's no rule that says what you can and can't do. You don't even have to turn up to Parliament ever. When you're on a local council, you do. If you don't go to a meeting, I think it's every 6 months or something, there is a minimum, then you'd basically be booted out unless, you know, maternity or, you know, sickness, a really good excuse. But in Parliament now, you can just get elected, move to the south of France, never do anything. And I mean, I'd like to think you wouldn't get elected again, but what I'd like to think is never actually the case, because I think that has almost certainly happened in the past.
Well, I've just realised now you say that, you've just opened up a whole world of questions I have about booze legislation. So I've got two mini questions before my third question, and then we'll create your dream pub, because I know you have to be back in the other realm for important parliamentary business. First mini question, I'm a huge fan of minimum alcohol pricing, and I think it the money could be used to fund a lot of the services that are stretched because of alcohol. So, you know, paramedics, hospitals, police, and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Why is no one bringing it in? Is it just a load of kind of people going, oh, I should be able to pay £5 for my bottle of Merlot if I want to kind of thing?
Almost certainly that is the case. There was a conversation about it in Scotland. Have I imagined that?
No, it's been in Scotland for years.
Yeah.
Ian Scotland.
Yeah, it's been Ian Scotland.
Oh, right. I thought that was like an MP called Ian Scotland.
Yeah, almost certainly there is an MP over the years who's been called Ian Scotland. I can think of a Baroness Scotland right off the top of my head. So, yeah, I think that libertarianism and the idea of the nanny state, which I have to say that the nanny state argument I find to just be so grueling, as if like 99.9% of the population ever had a nanny. even the language of it speaks to the kind of people who might say it, like the nanny state. Almost certainly the idea of freedom of choice being a thing. But look, without the actual exchequer details of exactly how much duty it would bring in, it's shifting around tax things. But one thing I would say against it is it's not necessarily an entirely progressive tax. Like VAT isn't particularly progressive because everybody pays it at the same rate. So you have to make sure that when you're looking at any particular tax changes, that the root of that is fairness. And what I wouldn't want to see is my constituents paying as a proportion of their income more tax than the kind of people who have a nanny.
But I don't think it would be a tax. It's just an increase to the minimum price companies can charge for their booze, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and there's all sort of health benefits of that sort of thing. And, you know, as somebody who's lived with alcohol, not myself personally, but my brother was an alcoholic for many years. My grandfather was an alcoholic. You know, there is all sorts of, I'd say, potential in the space of that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, at the moment, the government is saying that even though there's a security risk, they won't tell people not to have TikTok on government accounts because of freedom of choice, which, you know, using, you know, a threat from China as an argument for freedom of choice does seem to be quite the anomaly.
Jess, I'm actually going to house my third question for the second half of the podcast, because we're aware you are on a tight schedule. We want to drill down into the sort of the pub stroke bar life of the House of Commons, but I think that's going to have to wait till later on, because
it
does feel a little bit like a realm within a realm.
Mm-hmm.
So let's head to your pub. What was your experience of pubs growing up? What area of the country, and what were your regular haunts like?
So I grew up in Birmingham, where I still live. I live less than 500 metres from where I grew up, so the pubs are largely the same. So my experience of pubs as a kid was either being sat outside one of them with a packet of crisps and a lemonade while my grandfather was inside the pub and also bookies. my parents would take us to the pub. There was a pub in Birmingham called the Old Mow, which is called the Old Mosley Arms, that is basically the heart of the Labour Party in South Birmingham. It's like they have Labour Party meetings in there, and it was always like there was quite a lot of like folk bands that would play in there. My parents, I remember, you know, sitting in the sort of downstairs bar while, I don't know, the Communist Party were meeting upstairs when I was a kid. And I worked in pubs from the age of 16 until I was 22. I permanently had a bar job. I come from a part of Birmingham, a place called Mosley, which is basically all pubs. It's one of those places where, you know, like, you know, students would do a mile of pubs. Like, you know, there are many, 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 many pubs there. And my husband claims that he has pulled a pint behind every single one of them. He has worked in every single one. In fact, I have a T-shirt sometimes that I wear to bed, as well as the Oops, I Did It Again tour, because my husband was a roadie on that with Britney Spears. I also have a T-shirt, although I'm not sure where it is, but I used to that when one of the pubs in Mosley became a Firkin in the years of the Firkin pub. Have they gone now, Firkin pubs?
Yeah.
Is that's not a thing anymore? And it says, I'm not shirking, I'm Firkin working. and that was what he had to wear behind the Firkin bar. As a child, I only really remember sort of socialist meetings in pubs rather than us going to the pub a lot to socialise. But as a teenager and an adult myself, it is the absolute heart of everything in my life.
They say all politics is local. Did you actually sort of learn stuff from being around people in those pubs, serving them?
100%. I often say that the greatest training for being a politician was being a barmaid. Much, much better than my degree in economics. Far, far more. The vast majority of politics that people don't know about is not the stuff that happens in the House of Commons. It is about interacting with people, often people with very forthright views who you might not agree with. And there's nothing like working behind a bar to train you to deal with that, or to train you to deal with sort of belligerent certain men. That definitely, I learned that along the way. But yeah, I think that my ability and the reason that I have been in any way a success as a politician is because I'm really good at chat. And that came from working behind a bar.
And was it also the kind of socialist meetings as well? Did that kind of spark an interest in politics then?
I was more interested in them having better crisp flavours, I think,
right,
at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there was never a moment in my life when I wasn't at a socialist meeting. So they were relatively tedious. So whether it was in the pub or in my house, or I went to Women's Liberation Playgroup, like, for example, like, my fireworks night was run by the Labour Party. We got our food from a cooperative, like, run by the Labour Party, where one person would go to the market and buy up a load of stuff, and then it would be give. I mean, like, when people say that they have a sort of socialist upbringing, I think what you mean is that your parents watched Newsnight and spoke to you about it. Well, my life was actively, like, every single thing. Childminders were a collective of women who'd got together in the Labour Party. It was every part of my life. So the pub, obviously, was also a part of that. There was no moment where there wasn't somebody, you know, a group of people plotting something at any point in my life.
Do you think the pub still has the same value now to back then? Do you think things have changed at all?
Well, I mean, I represent a part of Birmingham where quite a lot of the pubs that would have existed when I was a kid are no longer there. And in many cases, some of them are like mosques, which I always find to be a delightful and amusing transition. But the pubs have changed without a shadow of a doubt. So when I think of the pub now, so I go to very much still have local pubs to me that I go to very regularly. It's the same people who are often in there as well as, you know, people who are coming from outside. And it is very much the heart of the community. But they're not pubs as they were. Like, one of them, for example, used to be a Ryman's. It was like an office shop, and now it's like a real ale pub. But it's not like, you know, it's not dark oak and beams and horse brass, and also it's not like in the 90s the wine bar like sort of era. They are different now, but I think that the fundamental of a place to go and commune is the same. Not for everyone, but for me.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
L- Let's commune in your pub now, Jess. So start us off with two draft items for you, please.
So, I mean, I am definitely have been captured by the weird, salty, sour phenomenon of beer. However, I think that if I really had a choice, I would just want a lager and lime. I once asked for a lager and lime in Hackney in a pub to a woman who must have been about 18, and she put a lime in my pint of lager. So I was like, what has happened here? What has just happened? So, you know, like a lager like Stouwpramen or something, I'd have to have a lager on draft because there's nothing more refreshing. There is literally nothing more refreshing than a lager shandy on a hot day. I mean, straight back.
Yeah.
Absolutely the king of drinks. But I always have like a top or a lime in my lager these days. I'm trying to hark back to my nan or something. So I would have like a foreign lager. I don't like Carling or anything. And I had a boyfriend who drank Stella Artois like it was in the taps. And so I have a sort of like a mental block about that. But yeah, like, you know, I any of those foreign beers that are lagers.
Unpatriotic Jess Phillips, yep. Slams national, yeah. Lager Carling.
Jess Phillips hates Burton on Trent. That's Burton on Trent's, I do love Marmite though, so I'll give that shout out to Burton on Trent.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who only drinks Carling, and whenever I go to like markets, vintage markets or junk shops and stuff, I always try and buy him like old Carling accoutrement because he only drinks, my husband calls it cooking lager.
Yeah,
and who doesn't like a cooking lager? But I think we'll go for Stouwpramen for you, just because that does have the ABV to hold up to shandification.
Yes.
Hold up to the addition of lime. So I think that's quite a wise choice.
That would be my first draft. Now, my second... Now, I would quite like a cider, really. I really like a cider on draft. Although, you know, I do feel like... And I wouldn't be able to be specific about the name because the bars I go to that have these, like, I hate the salty ones. They literally taste like bile. But the sort of fruity sour beers that are around now, but they just change every week. So I don't even know the names of any of them, but I do really like that. But however, I'm going to just go for a Rattler.
Oh, yes.
In Cornwall. Like, specifically, you have to be in Cornwall and get Rattler on draft. I went to the Rattler Farm. It was one of the best days out I've ever been. I highly recommend the Rattler Farm in Cornwall. But yeah, a cold pint of Rattler from draft is just perfection.
I mean, when you see that snake with sunglasses...
Oh, yeah, it's so naff, isn't
it? ...on the bar, you know you're in for something quality.
I've tried to buy it. Like, my son, who is 18, like, it was his sort of first foray on a holiday, and he really, really liked Rattler. And so we tried to buy him some here in the... And you can buy it in bottles, but it's just not the same as draft.
It's strong stuff, Rattler.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. You only need two pints. As I've got older, I find that I used to just almost exclusively drink pints, but I just get really full. So I can't drink too much. And so I quite like that now it's like two thirds and things in those fancy ones, those fancy beers. But yeah, I'm going to go for Stouwpramen and Rattler. If I had to have a draft, that was what it would be.
Morning Stouwpramen. Mm-hmm. Sorry, just wanted to... We can punch that in. A bit of laughter afterwards.
What's the ABV of draft Rattler, Rob?
I want to say 7%, but I mean...
No.
Is it not that much?
Can't be, surely.
It's lethal stuff.
It really is. It's giggle juice.
Yeah.
Well, it goes up to, if you get it in bottles, it's anywhere from 4.8 to 8.4.
Ooh.
So goodness knows. They're launching, apparently, 4% version.
6%, I'd say, is the standard.
Yeah. I'm not interested in your 4%. I want to basically have 2 points and be that lovely giddy, and you're going to walk home from the beachside bar that you're in Cornwall.
Feeling a bit sunburned.
Yeah, feeling a bit sunburned. I'm very fair-skinned. I'm always feeling a bit sunburned.
Well, luckily, Jess has pulled this back because initially it was Turncoat MP Jess Phillips prefers European, the so-called EU's... bureaucratic lagers.
Yeah.
But then we're back in with good old-fashioned Rattler cider.
Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office. Viking, west, variable 2 to 4, occasionally westerly 5 at first, east, northerly or northwesterly 4 or 5, becoming variable 2 to 4, west, slight, occasionally moderate at first, east, slight or moderate, in west, occasional rain, good, occasionally moderate, north at Sierra, northerly or northwesterly 4 or 5 pints, occasionally lager at first, becoming variable 2 to 4, slight or whiskey, occasional rum, desire becoming fervent, pubs, occasionally distant. South at Sierra, pintily or north pintily 4 or 5, occasionally cider, becoming pubs 2 to 4, slight or moderately drunk, occasional rain, pub appearing in mist, variable. German Bite, variable 2 to 4 pints, becoming cyclonic 3 to 5 pubs, pubs or pubs. Rain later in pubs. Consuming mist, pubs, pubs, pubs.
We next move on to your bottles and cans, bottles and or cans. What are you going for there?
So you want these to be alcoholic?
No, it can be anything. Like.
Okay, right. So, bottles, including wine. I want some wine in my pub.
Yeah. Now's your chance.
It's got to be good wine, and I'm no wine expert, but I cannot bear shit wine in the pub. And we have near where I live in Birmingham, there is a place called Grace and James, and it's sort of like, it's like a proper sort of winery place. And they have an amazing, like really cold Riesling. I don't know what the name of it is, but I go in and I say to Henry, who works behind the bar, give me that nice wine, and he knows what I mean.
What's the name of the shop?
It's called Grace and James, and it's a sort of cheese and wine shop, and it's got a bar in it as well. So he knows what I mean when I say that nice wine, or, you know, that rosé I like. He knows what I'm after. So if anyone is listening to this and wants it, just go into Grace and James in King's Heath in Birmingham and say to Henry, that nice wine that Jess likes, and he will know. He will know nice. Which one it is.
Or Queen's Heath post Joe Lycett.
Queen's Heath,
right?
Yes, yeah. Indeed. It's on the same row. Grace and James is, which during Queen's Heath changes its name to Will Grace and James.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's on the same road that we have the Pride March for
brilliant.
Queen's Heath every year. So yeah, they're very much part of that whole gang of people. I've made us sound like we're the Bloomsbury set, like me, Joe Lycett, the people of Henry from Grace and James, and our Riesling. But to be honest, that is what we are. We are a gang of people. So how many bottles am I allowed?
It's two.
Two bottles. So I'm going to have that nice Riesling, but I'm going to have a spirit as well. Or is that a different category?
You can have a spirit here. You also get two spirits.
Oh, right. Okay, forget it then. I won't have a spirit if I'm getting... Right, okay. So what I'm going to go for, although I almost never drink it, but it is, in my memory of working in pubs, it is the only place that it exists, is small bottles of bitter lemon.
Mm. Ooh.
You know, the little Schweppes bottles of bitter lemon that are sort of slightly cloudy, greeny, like those specific ones. Just because, my friend is sort of once when serving somebody, not dissimilar to the Hackney story. She worked in a pub called The Village in Moseley, and somebody had asked for like a vodka and bitter lemon, and she gave them a vodka with a bit of lemon in. That has always really amused me, that story. My friend Carl Adams once got locked in the pub, like he'd fallen asleep in the toilet and woke up and he was in the pub at night, which is like the dream. Anyway, The Village pub, the place that would serve underage drinkers when I was a child. It doesn't do that anymore. It's actually run by my friend very, very responsibly. But quite a lot of my friends own pubs, actually. So three of my friends are publicans and they own multiple pubs across Birmingham. So I'm very much still part of that culture. But there's just something that screams pub as it used to be about a bottle of bitter lemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also gin and bitter lemon.
Gin and bitter lemon. Yeah.
Because it's sort of, even though it's called bitter lemon, it's much sweeter than tonic.
There's nothing bitter about bitter lemon.
Well, despite having looked high and low for the phone number for Grace and James in order to specify what the Riesling is that Jess likes so much, answer came there none. So we're going to have to list it as that nice Riesling from Grace and James is your choice. But we take a break now from your pub, Jess, to head over to the lovely Robin for the Moon Underwater pub quiz.
Okay, everybody, pens out, eyes down, it's time for the quiz. He played for Zimbabwe, but he was born in South Africa. I know Alaska is bigger, that wasn't the question. Put your phone away. Right, Michael Jackson's Funky Monkey have been deducted 5 points.
Thanks, John. From the age of Riesling to the age of reason. Yes, it's the Moon Underwater pub quiz. Are you a fan of the pub quiz, Jess?
I absolutely love a pub quiz. I like nothing more. It's literally, I would travel some distance to go to a good pub quiz.
Oh, that's good. Good news. Because this week, our pub quiz, it's not about politics at all. I mean, I could have made it more thematic, but it's about TV chefs.
Okay.
How are you on TV chefs?
Better than I am on politics.
Good.
it's a horrible moment when I'm in a pub quiz and there's a thing about politics because people will expect me to know things that I just don't know.
Right. Isn't it Ivo Graham who knows every single MP? That's one of his things, isn't it?
Whenever I'm with Ivo, I just say the names of MPs and he tells me their constituents. He came into Parliament and watched PMQs, and the whole time he just was saying everybody's constituencies. It was a delight.
Great. Okay, well, this is the Moon Underwater pub quiz about TV chefs. So question one, the brilliant Keith Floyd would often invite his cameraman in for a close-up of his wine-soaked concoctions, but what was the cameraman's name? Do you want multiple choice or do you know?
Yes, please. No, I think I need multiple choice, although I love it when they have Keith Floyd on Saturday Kitchen.
John thinks he knows this.
He went through two cameramen.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. No. Oh, right.
Oh.
But I think you're referring, there's like the iconic cameraman that he would refer to.
Yeah. I'll give you my multiple choice then.
Go on then.
Is Terry, Clive or Ian?
Oh, God. I feel like all of those could be the answer. Yeah.
Question two. Rick Stein was often accompanied by his Jack Russell Terrier. Was his name A, Kipper, B, Hank or C, Chalky? And question three. Which TV chef spent 2 years in prison for burgling singer Paul Young's house in 1998? Was it Gina DeCampo, Tom Akins or Mary Berry?
Okay.
So there you go. Those are your three questions about TV mm-hmm. chefs.
They are good. When I don't know the answer in a pub quiz, I always just say the first woman to swim the channel. And also, if you don't know the question on University Challenge, always just say James Joyce or Benjamin Britten, and 9 times out of 10 you're right.
Yeah, that's good. Vaughan Williams comes up a lot.
Yeah.
In the classical music round.
Well, what a delightful quiz that is, Robin. I think I'd have got two of them without the options, but we shall see. I could be wrong. We're delighted to have with us Jess Phillips creating her dream pub, which so far has Star of Praman, Rattler Cider, that nice Riesling from Grace and James, Bitter Lemon, and answers awaiting. So join us back in part two.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.